Welcome to the Centre for Cities City Minutes South Yorkshire Elections series. On the 5th of May 2022, residents of South Yorkshire will head to the polls to elect their next Metro Mayor. We invited all declared candidates to discuss their priorities for improving the economic prosperity of the area.
I'm Andrew Carter from the think tank Centre for Cities, and for this City Minutes episode, I'm joined by Simon Billcliffe, who is the Yorkshire Party's candidate to be the next South Yorkshire Mayor. Welcome, Simon.
Thank you for having me. It's nice to be here.
As well as wanting to be the next Mayor of South Yorkshire, you're also a successful businessman. So say a little bit about, you know, Hugh and where you've come from and why you want to be Mayor of South Yorkshire now.
Thank you. Where I've come from is Barnsley in South Yorkshire, and unfortunately, at the time of me leaving university, it was the time of the miners' strike. And like many of my peers at that time, there were no jobs up there. We had to move. Fast forward, I realised that after a few years working in industry, that there needed to be a different way of running a business. So I decided in 1996 to set up Webmart, which is now an integrated marketing company. At the time, was a print broking company, and we've evolved through. But I set it up as a Marxist capitalist business. And this eclectic oxymoron, it means that we use capitalism to create value, but we used, when we had this, the profits, to share that out amongst the workers that created that, but also took in the other externalities of the environmental impact of what we did, and also charitable giving, which has been a huge part of our DNA. And so what I wanted to do with this is to create, to show a case study that you can run a business on very different moral and ethical grounds and still be successful. That has allowed me now to have the time to actually move into politics to scale that kind of ethos, that everybody should win out of the society that we've got. There shouldn't be people left behind. It's obviously easy and glib to say, but there are ways and methods and methodologies and alignment that you can get to deliver that. And that's why, if you know, people think, oh, politicians are all the same, and I'm very much not in the same mould as the Etonian politician, I think it's fair to say. So, I'm building on the experience that I've got of running the company for 26 years in this unorthodox way, and I want to apply the same ethos to politics and to bring South Yorkshire, which is a fantastic part of the country, into national and international focus. But also within South Yorkshire to connect all of the really good siloed bits that are going on there, to collaborate with people, to bring a better ecosystem together by connecting people. So I think the skill set I've got does transfer, you know, transferable skills into the political environment to scale this. Instead of doing it at a company level, do it at a community level.
And We'll get on to the sort of specifics maybe of, you know, what you would actually do as mayor. But before that, I mean, what's your take on the South Yorkshire sort of economy? You know, it's made up of four local authorities. You know, it's 1.5 million sort of people, give or take. But, you know, when you look at the economy, when you analyse it, when you reflect on it, you know, what's your take on the strengths, but also I suppose the weaknesses? You know, how would you describe it to the outsider who didn't know very much about it?
I would describe it as very much not like your mind's eye is. Because if you've never been there and you've never actually gone around the area, you'd be surprised, staggered at how beautiful it is. From a natural point of view, you're right on the edge of the Peak District and the Pennines, you know, on the west side. How entrepreneurial it is, how creative it is. And it's been fascinating, this journey, to see, you know, areas that you wouldn't normally go into, like healthcare and education, to see some really clued up, innovative things happening. And then it's just a matter of, and you know, people aren't aware of the wonderful opportunity that you've got of having not only a good career there and an entrepreneurial environment, but also a good quality of life. So you can actually afford to buy a house and you can actually afford to have a family, which in many parts of the country is an unattainable dream. And so this is, when I bring people into Barnsley, we've got an office obviously in Barnsley, and show them people from down south, show them Barnsley for the first time. They're literally, their jaws drop. But they say, it's literally nothing like I was expecting. And they say, whatever you do, don't look in an estate agent's window, which, of course, is the first thing that they do as soon as they go in there. And they're like, they hold their hands to their face, go, that can't be right. What, a four-bedroomed house for 200,000? Oh, my goodness me. And, you know, and then all of a sudden they start to think, actually, this is... You've got the, you know, post-COVID, we've got a fantastic opportunity because people can work from where they live. They don't have to move now in the same way as they perhaps would have had to do 5 years ago to where the work is. You can actually do it there. We've got high-speed broadband, you know, it's fibre broadband being installed already everywhere. So you can actually have a really good career and a really good quality of life in South Yorkshire and get to places easily without, you know, it's very well connected to the motorway network. It's very well connected to wonderful parts, you know, the Peak District and the Pennines are just wonderful kind of things to do. And there's lots of, you know, the coast isn't far away. So, and we don't shout about it. That's one of the things. I mean, it's an overused kind of strength. We're not big... you know, kind of big I ams up there. And in many respects, that's to our detriment. We don't shout about our successes. We're quite humble. And I think in many respects, that's a legacy of the, you know, the deindustrialisation that happened in the 1980s. We, you know, it really did knock the wind out of our sails. And we're quite humble in the way that, you know, think, well, I'm doing well, but I don't want to shout about it. You know, you have that kind of, community insecurity about doing well because it might all come crashing down again. And that's where I think, as a South Yorkshire mayor, that would be, you know, so it is an advocacy role externally and it's a connecting role internally. And, it needs to sell itself as a region, not because it hasn't got things to do, but because nobody knows about it unless you happen to live there or have some other connection with it.
So there's lots of good things to shout about and to talk about and to promote. I mean, when you look at the area, I mean... Can I push you on a little bit? What are you worried about? You know, what are the worries that you have about, you know, about the area's economy as you currently see it? There's lots of good stuff there, and you know, I get that. What are you then? What are you worried about? What are the bits that you keep?
Well, I'm not a worrier for one thing. That isn't part of my DNA. I think the areas that we, you know, one of the things that is absolutely clear when you look at it is there is a democratic deficit. We've got, if you look at Yorkshire as a whole, it's 5.5 million people. It's, you know, same size, slightly bigger than Scotland. And yet we've got literally no political representation of any gravitas because our MPs are split amongst two parties. They never vote as a bloc. So it means that we end up with the infrastructure that we've got because actually... none of the people in West... Everything gets indexed against what it means in Westminster with the big parties. Yeah, these are metropolitan elites, whether they like to think of themselves as being very grounded or not. And so between, you know, you look at the productivity of Yorkshire, it's way behind the national average because the infrastructure isn't there. You know, people say, oh, you know, if, you know, obviously you're not good enough effectively because your productivity is low. I say, whoa. You imagine trying to get around London without the tube network or without the M25. And then imagine how your productivity would improve. Between Manchester and Sheffield, which is the fourth largest city in the UK, there are quite literally two cart tracks, which is Snake Pass and Woodhead, one of which has fallen down the mountainside at the moment, so it's shut most of the time. The other one shuts at night because of roadworks, because it's single-track road. And we've got the most picturesque, beautiful railway track between the two, which is rather like a leisure railway. You know what I mean? It goes through Hope Valley, and it's lovely to see, but it takes forever to get a few, you know, it's like 25 miles or whatever, and it takes an hour and a bit. You know, hello. We're back in the, you know, early 20th century. not the heading on towards the mid of the 21st century. And that's all because of politics. It's all because we haven't got that right political gravitas to say, look, we're a 163 billion economy. We've got such a lot of potential that we cannot realise because we haven't got the infrastructure, the road infrastructure for for connecting people together as much as possible. So that's the biggest thing. And that's the democratic deficit. That's why I'm standing for the Yorkshire Party, because it is there for a strong regional parliament. And if we get that, then we have more relevant decisions made, rather than us going cap in hand like Oliver Twist down to Westminster to bid for bits and bobs and this, that, and the other. There's no long-term strategy at all. And you end up with stupid decisions like us not getting high-speed links between these major cities because, for whatever political reason, it isn't worthy. And that's completely wrong. So it's not a worry. It's just it's injustice that makes me really determined to drive forward in this election. And, you know, of course, I can't get a parliament by being South Yorkshire mayor. However, this will be the first time ever that a regional party in England would have a position of anything like this power. So it really is a stride in that direction, which is why I'm putting all of the time and effort I possibly can into winning this seat or this role.
So let's move to what you would do, as it were, if you were mayor. And again, focusing on the sort of economy questions, you've talked about creating an environment that so businesses can grow and they can expand and they can start and they can be successful. You've talked about the connections between schools and education and businesses, and obviously you've already touched on the need to improve transport, not only at the South Yorkshire level but at the broader level. So just unpack, just say a little bit more about what your sort of economic priorities are. And I suppose also, as you know, all the mayors in different parts of the country, there's a bunch of hard powers, as it were, that they've got control over and resources. And there's a bunch of other stuff that they do where they're using their convening, facilitating pulpit sort of powers as well. So just say a little bit more around that as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's two basic things: self-help and get others to help. So self-help is connectivity, of connecting the best practice, signposting, of people who are kindred spirits who can support people. And that comes, you know, in sales, there is an old saying, you've got two ears and one mouth and you use it in that proportion. So it's listening to what is the need and then connecting people. So getting an ecosystem, almost like a tube map, of on a sectoral basis, on a skills basis, of the area, so people can easily be put in touch with other people. That connectivity is hugely important, and it's not been done anywhere near as good. There's some superb, I mean, like world-class companies here in South Yorkshire that people have never heard of. I mean, I bumped into somebody through a mutual friend, and they're recruiting 600 people in the legal profession in Sheffield. And, you know, and they're raising, you know, hundreds of millions of pounds for the expansion, da 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 da. And I spoke to the owner, I said, look, you know, this fantastic story. I said, have you ever told anybody about it? He said, no. I said, what? Why not? He said, well, nobody's ever asked. And you think, you know, this voyage of discovery, these are things that are happening there now, and that will raise ambition and aspiration as well, which is a key thing. So you get these case studies of excellence, of things that are happening there already, and it empowers people. Then mentoring is hugely important. You know, if you look at Silicon Valley and other hubs of economic well-being, mentoring and coaching is really, really important. And
this is your business in a box idea, yeah. Is that right?
This is the human side of business in a box. Then you've got it, you know, that's internally, and the business in a box is a concept where we want it to be, South Yorkshire, to be the easiest place in the world to start a business and to prosper and to scale it. And so you then, you know, and it sounds quite dull, but The one continuum that every company has is accounting software. So if we bolt in all of the support services to a free accounting service that people could have, you know, I'm thinking of starting up a business. Well, start here. Instead of having to go through to accountants and lawyers and you know, have all of the cost and all of the distraction of that, if we make that really easy for people to do as a literally step-by-step guide. And then we have the metrics to know when they're looking to, you know, I'm looking to employ somebody. What do I do? Well, you say, well, here's a standard contract of employment. This is what you, you know, this is what you need to do and work it through. It's a wonderfully easy way. Having set my business up in the first place, I was always staggered. I knew what I wanted to do in that case was broking printing. But I had to get involved. I had to be a polymath of the legal structures and the, you know, to be compliant. Well, if you bring that compliance in, you can, and don't have to worry about it, you're auto-compliant because of this, then you can focus 100% of your time on building your business. And then if you say, well, you know, I was sat around a table, and around that table was £3 billion worth of investment. It was with the British Business Bank in Sheffield. And the ecosystem there is very... very underdeveloped compared with, say, London. And it's not really on people's radar screen, you know, the difference between private equity and venture capital and angel investment and da-da-da-da-da. This isn't part of the common parlance of people growing businesses in South Yorkshire. And it isn't for everybody. As I say, I was self-funded. I've never borrowed a penny from anybody. But for other companies that are trying to scale pre-revenue and stuff like that, this is really important because not only does it bring funds in to grow your business, but it brings smart money in. Money with experience, with connections, with, you know, somebody, a peer group, rather than a bank who'll just lend it you and put a personal guarantee. These people have got skin in the game and they've got experience that you can draw on. So you will be more successful often with that. So that's the kind of internal bit. Externally, we're going to get a twinning program up. You know, like towns have twinning with places after the Second World War, we twinned with lots of German things. So, we have a better understanding. We're going to do an economic twinning. And the first one that we're going to twin with is Oxfordshire, where they have got a lot of companies trying to grow. Really difficult to get talent, to get space, to get... But if they come to South Yorkshire, we will give a one point of contact and within 24 hours, we will get a solution for them. Either a partner company who's already in South Yorkshire that can support them, or space that they can build and deliver high quality jobs into the region, or whatever other solution that they're wanting to find. If they're struggling to do it in Oxfordshire because it's an overheated economy, this is a real example of levelling up at a micro level, at an individual level. It doesn't wait 10 years for us to work towards some, you know, vague target of getting nearish something that's down there. Or this is today it can happen. And indeed, I was just speaking to somebody about it. Said, oh, God, I've got a need for, would you believe it, 2,000 lanterns, like Victorian lanterns. Could you get in touch? So they sent me the spec. I sent it on to somebody in Barnsley. And they're working now to get that done. That was just a one opportunity that's out there. Huge amount of redistribution of value between it. And, of course, that helps all of the UK. It isn't, you know, it's not all about me. It's if Yorkshire gets up to the national average, everybody wins. You know, the GDP of the UK goes up, better quality of life and better opportunities. You know, it's just, it's not a zero-sum game. And then you go on to education, and education is a huge, huge part of this, not only in the short term, but in the medium and long term, of course. And if you look at, you know, I talked to Professor Roger De Vries down at University of Kent, who was on a BBC programme about social mobility. I'm fascinated about how we can be more effective. And the one thing that I came away from that is pathways. Like pathways that if you are a middle class professional family, you always have a pathway in for your children to go into what you do typically. You know, they'll see what you're working on, they'll see the quality of life you have, they'll, you know, they can get you to internships and they can show part of the waves for their offspring to go into those kind of things. If you come from a a poorer background in terms of connectivity, or very working class, or if your parents have been underemployed or unemployed, you simply don't have the opportunities that people often can have. So this is where pathways come in. And pathways start very early, primary school, where you bring in the range of wonderful range of jobs and careers in the profit for profit sector or not for profit sector, just an awareness of it, and you actually give people those staging posts through life, and it helps with engagement at school, it helps with connectivity with talent to post education opportunities, it brings in apprenticeships and degree apprenticeships, which are much more accessible for people without the bank of mum and dad. You know, coming out of if you're out of a family that nobody's ever gone to university, the thought of coming out after 3 years with £50,000 of the debt is just a non-starter. So raising the awareness of the ways that you can get continual professional development through lifelong learning, this is really important, and it does start early. You know, so you understand that, you know, we're all very different. Some people go into the more creative, some people will go into the more practical, some people will go into the more theoretical, you know, and it's that kind of giving them, whoever you are, the absolutely ideal opportunity to find your groove, you know, through education and out of the other side to have the best life chances that you could possibly have. And that's helped also with, without getting too technical, with Gatsby 5 and 6, which are now starting to basically mean schools do care about what the life outcomes are of their pupils, whereas before it was a little box that you know let's get to the exams and then have a good Ofsted. Now, to get an outstanding Ofsted, you've got to look at the trajectory from the baseline when they come into your academic institution through to the post leaving lives that the pupils lead. So that's much more enlightened approach, and it's much more relevant. So you're pushing on an open door now, whereas before it was quite difficult quite often to engage with schools and other academic institutions.
So you talked about sort of creating a business environment that is welcoming and, you know, easy for place, you know, businesses that are in the area already or want to come to the area. And obviously then you touched on the significance and importance of education in the schooling system, but also in making sure our adults as you get the skills that they want as well. And then the third area, just to get your thoughts on, which you touched on, you talked a little bit about the transport or connectivity issues. You talked a little bit about Sheffield to Manchester, but just say a little bit more around, you know, the connectivity within, you know, the South Yorkshire area. And I guess part of that, you know, the current mayor has made pushes on bus franchising and improving the bus network as part of that. I'm not saying that's all of that, but that is a fundamental. I'd be interested in your, you know, kind of reflections on the transport. You know, everybody wants a better transport system.
Yeah.
But it's the mean, you know, what is it that we're actually going to do? What are the means we're going to use in order to realise that?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, the transport infrastructure is hugely important, and of course buses use roads as well as cars. And you know, what I was staggered about in kind of background to this, 25% of households don't have any independent means of transport. A quarter. And it's usually in the lower socioeconomic groups, as you can imagine. So by having poor bus services, it really disproportionately impacts the least well-off in society. And it has not just economic, but social and loneliness and quality of life stuff. So they can't get out into the nice parts of the, you know, to go on day trips out and stuff like that. So it is critically important. You know, for many people who listen, they may never use a bus. But if you actually look into how empowering a good bus network is, I mean, then you have to get involved in it. So I'm very pleased that the bus network is under this role. It is a complex solution. I mean, I remember when I grew up in South Yorkshire, as a young person, I could get anywhere in South Yorkshire for 2 pence. This was back in pre the privatisation of the bus service. That equivalent to these days, about 32 pence. Now, the cheapest that any young person can get around South Yorkshire is £2.70. So it's gone up, yeah, eightfold in that time. And so this hasn't worked. And the irony is now you have Boris Johnson saying that you're using Transport for London as the paragon of wonderful transport networks. And yet it was the Thatcher government that deregulated and made this pig's ear of a system that they're now trying to unwind again.
So would you go towards the... Would you adopt the franchising model defo, that's been proposed?
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Would. It has to be.
That gives you the opportunity to influence not only the network, but also the fares that are charged on the network.
Absolutely.
And to really figure out where you need to take those services, you know, in the absence of them doing it, you know, voluntarily.
Absolutely. You cannot leave things like this to private industry for profit motives. You can't, because capitalism is very, very good at making economic surplus, and it is the best way we've got, but it doesn't take into account externalities, as they're called. You know, clearly we think of pollution, but also the social impact of not having provision. That isn't factored in at all. The opportunity cost of not having people be able to get to the places that they need to get for their own, you know, physical and mental well-being and the sense of connectivity, those are just nowhere to be seen in any P&L and any balance sheet. So, of course, and these are the things that really do matter for people's quality of life. So having the facility to influence that, to bring those externalities into the bus provision is vital. And, you know, yes, it's going to cost a lot of money, but bear in mind, this is unravelling a mess that the Conservatives made, that even they now say is an absolute dog's dinner, like with the trains. Exactly the same kind of thing. That, you know, they use their political dogma and their feeling that, you know, private enterprise is universally good. And that you look at, you know, the way that it's turned out, you've got to have a social element to this. You've got to have bring in these the environmental impact of it. You know, a bus can take 72 cars off the road. You know, so you even if you're if they're all EVs, you've still got the you've still got the congestion that it causes, and you know all of those kind of things. Let alone, of course, at the moment, not every car is an electric vehicle. So yeah, it is critical. Same with the trains, train service. We're still using these Pacer trains, which weren't even designed as a train. They were a bus that was put on rails. They're just appalling. If you've ever tried, you know, I used to travel down to London from Bicester, and everybody on that train were using laptops. They had power chargers. They were all, and it was a smooth journey in 40 minutes. You go on one of these and try and use a laptop, and literally you come out dizzy because you're bouncing around it. You can't use it. So that goes back to productivity, goes back to accessibility. You know, the contrast between being down here, you know, Bicester is a great example of what happened. You know, since I've been down in Bicester, it has had a motorway put through. It has had dual carriageways going around it. It has had another train station upgraded. It's had the line made into a fast line. It's now got a cross-country rail being built, etc., etc. None of this was you know, the big demand for it in the sense of, you know, public uprising and petitions and whatever. It just happened. Yet we have for all of the years that we've been up there, you just simply, you know, you can implore and what have you, but because it doesn't affect the majority of the people who are in Westminster or the people that they're beholden to, it doesn't get done. And you have to fight for everything, and you end up with very earnest, big documents, like 332 pages of levelling up with no detail in it at all. Just a methodology, which is just, you know, that's not helping anybody. So, yes, of course, on a macroeconomic thing, getting a regional parliament is crucial. In the meantime, we're not going to wait for that. We're going to do practical steps to make the infrastructure work better, to make the economic well-being of people better, and to make the quality of life for people in South Yorkshire better.
Brilliant. My guest today has been Simon Bilcliffe. Thanks, Simon, for being part of City Minutes.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this episode of City Minutes, which forms part of Centre for Cities' South Yorkshire election special. Visit our website, centreforcities.org, for all our work and analysis on the South Yorkshire elections and the role of metro mayors in raising the economic prosperity of their areas. You can find us on a number of listening platforms, including Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify and Stitcher. Please rate, review and subscribe if you like what you hear.